Welcome to the Jaharis podcast on health law and intellectual property. With me today is Professor Sharona Hoffman, the Edgar Hahn Professor of Law, Professor of Bioethics, and the co-director of the Law Medicine Center at Case Western Reserve University. Professor Hoffman focuses much of her research on health law and civil rights topics and has developed special expertise in health information technology, which is the topic of her last book, Electronic Health Records and Medical Big Data, Law and Policy, that was published under Cambridge University Press. Professor Hoffman won numerous awards, and we're honored to have her as a guest at the Jaharis podcast to talk about her last paper, What Genetic Testing Teaches About Long-Term Predictive Health Analytic Regulation, published in North Carolina Law Review in 2019. Welcome, Professor Hoffman. Could you tell us, please, what is predictive health analytics?
Sure. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you, and thanks so much for your interest in my work. So predictive health analytics is basically the analysis of large data sets to discover patterns and use those patterns to forecast or predict the likelihood of future events. So it's data analysis for purposes of predicting things that will happen in the future, and in our case, that's health conditions or health problems.
And where is this information being extracted from?
So in medicine, the data sets can come from all sorts of sources. They can come from electronic health records and health insurance claims, but they can also come from some surprising sources. So some of the data comes from purchasing records, criminal records, voting records, social media. Sometimes your Google searches can tell a lot about what problems you have or what you're interested in. And so data can be gathered from many, many varied sources and can tell people a lot about your health status.
And the data subjects are not always aware that this is the case, that the information is being extracted, let alone for this purpose, right?
That is correct. If your healthcare provider is disclosing information to third parties like marketers or employers, they have to get your consent. But if a data broker or somebody else is looking at publicly available data or data that they have a back door to, they don't have to get your consent because HIPAA doesn't cover those kinds of people. It only covers healthcare providers, healthcare clearinghouses, health insurers, and their business associates. And a lot of work is being done now by these data brokers whose entire business is to collect data, process data, and then sell it to interested third parties like marketers.
So before I decide whether I'm happy about this or extremely alarmed, can you tell us a little bit about the risks and the benefits in predictive health analytics?
Sure. So predictive health analytics is also known as artificial intelligence. That's sort of the more popular term. And these technologies can help doctors treat you. So there's a lot of research being done on developing algorithms that are going to analyze tumors, for example, to see which cancer tumor is aggressive and requires chemotherapy and which doesn't. So you might be saved having to go through chemotherapy thanks to artificial intelligence, which can really distinguish among tumors based on characteristics that are not apparent to the naked eye. And there's work being done to predict who is going to have complications after a surgery or another procedure, and who is at risk of readmission. So in the best case scenario, artificial intelligence or predictive health analytics can really help doctors treat you, can save costs, can save lives. But of course, there are also downsides. And so there are risks to your privacy. So if a data broker gets their hands on your information, they can now turn around and sell it to employers and lenders and all sorts of people who have their own agenda and don't have your best interest at heart. And they might discriminate against you. You might be deprived of a job because artificial intelligence indicates that you are at risk for cancer or cancer recurrence. And lenders might not want to lend to you because they're afraid that you won't be healthy and won't be able to work. I also am concerned about psychological harm. So if there are predictions, and some of these predictions relate to cognitive decline or serious heart disease in the future, or even clinical depression and suicide. And if people get that kind of information, might they suffer psychological harm, especially if there's nothing they can do about it, as in the case of cognitive decline? And is this going to affect the physician-patient relationship? Are we moving towards a world in which doctors don't really use their own judgment and their own skills, but rather they plug in your data to a computer and the computer spits out predictions and recommendations and so on? So is it going to be medicine by artificial intelligence rather than medicine that is carefully provided by your doctor?
And this sounds very alarming, at least the risk part. So my question is, how much say do individuals have about the fact that this technology is used on them? Can I say that I rather opt out?
Probably not. I mean, if that is what your doctor is using, they may ask you about it, but they also may not ask you about it because they're not actually doing anything physical to you. They are looking at imaging that's already been taken or your health records that already exist. And certainly you cannot opt out of data brokers or third parties looking at your data, which is publicly available to them. There's an example of Facebook. Facebook has to some extent gotten into the business of trying to predict who's at risk of suicide. And they might look at statements that you've made in your posts, such as things like goodbye, I may not speak to you for a while, and the person responding saying, are you okay? Please don't do this. And those combination of phrases might be interpreted by Facebook as indicating a risk of suicide, and they've been known to call the police and send them to your house. And you absolutely don't have any control over those kinds of scenarios.
Okay, wow. And in your paper, you compare predictive health analytics to genetic testing. How is it different from traditional DNA testing that also allows us to know way more than what is visible to the naked eye?
Right. So DNA testing involves actually analyzing a sample of your DNA. So you're going to be aware that it's being done usually because they take a cheek swab or they take a blood test. So it's not behind the scenes, though there have been cases where they've used blood samples that were taken for other reasons. But the point I make in the paper is that when genetic testing emerged, we were pretty thoughtful about it. And we talked about the privacy risks and the discrimination risks, and we formulated guidelines as to when it should be done and when it shouldn't be done, for example, on children. And we developed this whole service of genetic counseling, which provides education and support to people going through genetic testing. And I think we're sort of rushing into predictive health analytics in a way that is not as thoughtful. It's very alluring, you know, artificial intelligence. That just sounds so appealing and exciting. And I think we are not being as thoughtful about it when there are the same kinds of risks, privacy, discrimination, psychological harm. So in the paper, I urge everyone to be more careful and thoughtful about this.
And you propose several ways to do that, using either existing regulation or new ideas. Could you tell us a little bit about those?
Sure. So I talk about HIPAA. As I mentioned, HIPAA only covers, that's the privacy law, it only covers a very limited body of entities and service providers. And I think we need to expand it so that it reaches anyone that handles health information, so that data brokers, for example, should not be able to just freely sell health information to third parties. Or, you know, there are website operators that invite you to input all sorts of medical information and then they give you information back or give you potential diagnoses and so on. And they are then free to sell that information. So I think we need more privacy controls in this electronic era where anyone can do anything with your information. I also talk about the Americans with Disabilities Act. That anti-discrimination law is very, very important, but it only covers discrimination based on existing conditions or past health conditions or perceptions that somebody is currently ill. It does not reach situations in which somebody is perceived as being vulnerable to illness in the future. So an employer can freely say, I'm not going to hire you because I have information that indicates you will develop cognitive decline in 5 years. And that's not illegal because the employer is acknowledging you're healthy now. I'm worried about future conditions. I don't think that's a problem under the current ADA. But now that we have the capacity to make so many predictions, I think we need to revise that law and prohibit that type of discrimination. GINA, the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act, prohibits it for predictions based on genetic information, but it's limited just to genetics. It doesn't reach all these other data sources such as purchasing records, health records if somebody gets a hand on that, and so on. And so I think there's a big gap in the anti-discrimination law as well.
All those acts that are talking about discrimination are practically talking about after act, right? After something has already happened. I wonder if there was something that we can do that would be more upstream before, maybe in the data collection stage or somewhere before things might go wrong, or maybe misuse. I don't know. I've been contemplating this idea lately.
Right. So I think the anti-discrimination laws only deal with how people use information they already get. They can't use it for anti-discrimination purposes. I think if you want to prohibit collection, then you would have to go for something like HIPAA probably, so that different parties couldn't release the information. You could also prohibit, GINA actually prohibits employers and health insurers from trying to obtain the information. Mm-hmm. And so I guess you could add to the Americans with Disabilities Act and other laws a provision that tells employers they can't try to collect the information either.
Yeah, and also thinking about enforcement, how can we enforce all those excellent suggestions that the paper suggests?
The Americans with Disabilities Act does have a private cause of action, but of course it doesn't have protection for predictive information. HIPAA, the privacy rule, on the other hand, does not have a private cause of action. Enforcement is left up to the government, and the government just picks and chooses its battles. And so I have suggested that we add a private cause of action to HIPAA so that people who are truly harmed, you shouldn't just be able to sue because you discover somebody has information. But if you are truly harmed, if you are deprived of some kind of economic opportunity, or your reputation is ruined because information is publicized about you, you should be able to sue for a HIPAA privacy rule violation, in my opinion.
I think this is an excellent idea, especially given that everything is taking place in a market environment. And in a market environment, there are financial consequences to every harm. And the fact that we cannot, that there is no private cause of action at the moment for such harms, or that the paths to do that require a lot of almost possible level of proof that, or burden of proof, I think this could be a very good idea.
Definitely. Yeah, there are common law causes of action, but as you've mentioned, they require a very high level of proof, and they're not used very often. I think HIPAA would be a more direct route.
And what about the option of self-regulation of healthcare professionals or maybe of other entities?
Yeah, so I talk about that in the paper also. And I do recommend that just as we developed guidelines about genetic testing, we develop guidelines relating to predictive health analytics so that, we determine when should we pursue that, when shouldn't we pursue that in the genetics area. Some of the guidelines said, for example, don't test children for diseases that manifest in adulthood that can't be prevented, such as Alzheimer's disease. Or something like that, right? There's no reason to cause a young person who is under 18 trauma, worrying about the future before they really have the ability to determine themselves whether they want that kind of testing. And so if we're thoughtful, we may indeed formulate similar clinical guidelines for healthcare providers relating to predictive health analytics. When should you use it? When shouldn't you use it? And then just as we have genetic counselors, we may well need to have counselors who provide education and support to people who are going to be subject to predictive health analytics, explaining exactly what is going to be done and what the benefits and risks of getting the information are. Do you want to learn that you will have cognitive decline in the future? Do you want to learn that you're at risk of heart disease or depression or whatever it is, if there is nothing you can do, or even if there is something you can do? And so we should be thinking about that kind of counseling and support.
I absolutely agree. I wonder if there was something that we could also do with regards to the health professionals are not the only professionals in the picture, right? There are also all the programmers and the computer professionals that are taking a part in this industry. And I wonder if there's nothing that we should, or if there's room to think about some professional duties that these people should have. And we know that at the moment they're not getting a lot of ethical or more social training within their studies, but I wonder if there shouldn't be any, given the huge impact that their work has on our health and the way that we handle our lives. There are big implications, and there may be room for that as well.
Sure, I'd be all for it. Of course, if there's money to be made, that often is a more compelling argument than any ethical guidelines. But certainly anyone who is dealing in data or selling data should be made to understand that it can have very serious consequences for the data subject, that it's not just interesting or harmless.
So much food for thought. Thank you very, very much for this very interesting paper. And I thank you again for being our guest here in the Jaharis podcast. And I hope that we will have you again soon with a new paper.
Well, my pleasure. It was great to talk to you.
Thank you. This podcast has been recorded on February 25th, 2020. Thank you very much.